Hello, Lee.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you today?
I am very, very good. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
It seemed to me this discussion for a long time was that the government couldn't do anything. Now, all of a sudden, the government can do anything. That seems a tad suspicious to me.
Indeed. Well, it's been politicized right from the onset, and certainly from Mr. Stafford's perspective, understandably so. I absolutely understand it. And from the time I first heard of this, it was an aberration. It was something that just doesn't happen all that often in Canada, where somebody serving a life sentence at an eight-year mark is transferred to, albeit a medium security, but one without a perimeter fence. So that was highly unusual. And I just think the political pressure in this has resulted in a review of process, and ultimately our system, when working effectively, does have super maximum, medium, and minimum security institutions, and they're designed to have people earn and work their way out through cascading, is the word that's used in the correctional system. And essentially our minimum security facilities, which house about 15% of our federal inmates Canada-wide, I believe are really important because it's a opportunity to decompress prior to being released, which 95% of our people incarcerated in Canada eventually are released. And I think it's really important that that's in place. In this case, certainly political pressure seems to have played a role, and I think it brought to light a very rare case of somebody being ahead of schedule as opposed to 5 or 10 years beyond their eligibility dates, getting to a place like that.
Should
if
there
that makes sense to you, right?
Well, I don't. Nothing makes sense to me anymore.
Right. Well, I'm with you.
Should this kind of person, and by that I mean, you know, this kind of convicted felon,
yep,
be considered for this kind of move at all?
Well, certainly it's a real question that's being posed. I mean, to put it in context, we're talking about I don't even know what the number would be. It's far less than 1% of offenders that are in for something as heinous as that. What frustrates me is when we look at our Ontario provincial correctional system, for example, our detention centers. All 25 are maximum security institutions. There is no medium. There is no minimum. There is no alternatives. We made a move to that in the late 90s, early 2000s, to our super jail type model places. And you have everybody from vagrancy, minor offenses, all housed together, right up to murderers, and there's absolutely no opportunity there to work their way down. And our federal system, it's understandable that we have that in place because we have people that are serving life sentences and longer sentences. And when it comes to this case, my only guess is she had made considerable progress. I guess she had been there for a year without issue. There was no, what they deemed, they did a threat, a risk assessment on her. But clearly, it's an unusual circumstance, and I have to think that they, through the review, got it right on this case.
So this is one of those cases, and you're right. These are very, very rare.
They like, are.
I can rhyme these off on one hand. It's Paul Bernardo.
It's horrible names. Yeah.
McClintic. It's William Picton. There's a relatively short list in this country. So
and Charles Manson again in the States, who has his hearing every 2 years. He'll never get out. Bernardo will never get out. You're right. The gentleman or the guy from the Olson never was released, and they are rare, very rare.
But the question is, the public feeling for this is quite understandably angry, and they are generally disgusted by these people. Should that public feeling play a role in these decisions?
At the root of it, I don't believe so. I think that mass emotion should not, and I understand from a victim's perspective. I mean, I really, really understand Mr. Stafford's position and the family's position. Having said that, I'd like to feel that, no, that this does not have play a role. And I also believe Parliament shouldn't necessarily play a role in a reactive manner to something like this. I mean, clearly this is, we're coming up on a federal election year. I think from the beginning, from the onset, we reverted to what we've heard for decades now. The Liberals are soft on crime. The Conservatives are tough on crime. These are great talking points. And I think, the Liberal Party felt that they were in an awkward position and didn't want to come across as soft on crime. My perspective on that is they haven't been soft on crime. There hasn't been reforms post the tough on crime decade that we've had in Canada. It's been a very slow process. I work with people who are going through Ontario region federal reception area. It's backlogged months and months. The people who are serving short sentences end up not even having an opportunity to see the parole board. I mean, it's so not reflective of how things are going within our system. This case, as I say, is not a reflection of our prison system today. We are not soft on crime, and we have a very toxic culture and a hangover from what was... we're essentially at a point where there's nothing left to lose for the majority of our inmates in federal prisons today, Brian. And this, I thought, almost, you know, as difficult as this was, and I often had a lot of anxiety speaking to it because it is such a heinous crime, and it's very difficult to take a position, you know, contrary to the mass emotion, and I understand the feelings there, but I also believe that this was being managed accordingly and by the corrections officials, and that it was a case that was working. And I've compared it to Ashley Smith. And if we look at those two cases, I would say this is one where the system was working more effectively than what happened to her. But, which also elicited a tremendous response from Canadians and compassion as well.
And Lee, I think that you know as well as I do that the vast majority of people who talk about this issue are perfectly happy to see Terry Lynn McClintock rot in prison for the rest of her life.
They are. Yep.
And I don't blame them for that.
Nor do I. And this is where I have a battle. I believe, so the work I do when I work with, you know, I advise governments, I meet with provincial and federal governments, I'm a stakeholder, I work with private sector clients that are for the most part facing incarceration for the first time. The charges are not heinous. They're people who've made mistakes. And what frustrates me is the mechanisms are not in place for those offenders. And it's really frustrating. So I'm fighting for reform, and I'm fighting for the ability to, you know, the tough on crime approach that makes prison life harsh and deprives inmates of, you know, an opportunity to rehabilitate essentially does not equate into does not promote public safety. It just doesn't do it. So it's a tough balance, and this is a case that makes the debate very challenging. When the offense is so heinous, it just makes it a real challenge. And I think the political aspect of this has just really made it a challenge, I think, for the government of the day. Frankly, the majority of the people who are elected, governments of the day, whatever ministers and prime ministers, have very limited, if any, insight into the workings of our prisons.
Well, yeah, and
something like this comes to light, it comes to them.
Well, and here's the thing, is that when we have these discussions about the occasional parole hearing for a Paul Bernardo or,
yep,
you know, what happened in this case, yes, there's a large amount of publicity, there's a lot of discussion, but when is there ever a discussion about the general prison system and what we're trying to get out of it?
Well, and that's a tough one. So, I mean, it's really nuanced. You know that. Our prisons essentially are secretive, defensive. They resent public intrusion. They've been like that ever since I've been around. A tough-on-crime approach that makes prison life harsh and deprives inmates of opportunities to rehabilitate does not promote public safety. Yet, if you were to go on the other side of that, you're soft on crime. And it's oversimplified. Whenever we talk about this, and we only have a few minutes, Brian, here and there, but it's such a nuanced subject, and it's one that would take more than, you know, 5-10 minutes to cover thoroughly. But I understand the positions here. I understand the victims and their feeling, and I understand the majority of Canadians feeling the way they do. Again, what I get frustrated with is this is not a reflection of our system. We're not soft today. Our system is toxic. The culture is unhealthy, and it's not promoting public safety as is. People are not coming out better than when they went in.
Well, no. as you point out, and it's still a number that I'd never thought about, 95% of people in prison today are going to be out one day.
That's the accurate number, 95%, whether it's a year, 5, 10, 15, or 20. Yes, they come back, they return, they're going to be our neighbors, they'll be in our communities. And I know that from personal experience, and I find that scary. So I'd love to see us do better. I'd like to see us bring up the standards and do everything we can to make this a productive use of time. Loss of freedom is just such a massive punishment in its own right, unless you've been there and experienced it. So austerity or conditions and aesthetics really, I think, play a secondary role in that.
All right. Thank you, Lee. I appreciate the time, as always.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.
Okay, this is Lee Chappell, president of Canadian Prison Consulting.